was always kind of taught to dream big and think like a leader.
How can we hack the system?
We are producers to its core. We're makers.
That was that moment where I was like, yes, like this was a big one to put us on the map.
Creativity is messy. Perfect is boring.
That to me is good creative. That to me is success.
You can see talent in people.
We want to go create the next best brand in the world.
This is who we are and this is what we do.
This is Creatives Off Script. Welcome to the Creatives Off Script podcast hosted by Assemble. I'm your host, Nate Watkin. When you think about top music video directors in hip hop over the last two decades, a few names come to mind. Director X, Hype Williams, Colin Tilley, and one that undoubtedly belongs in that tier, Matt Alonso. Working with everyone from Lil Wayne to Justin Bieber to Chris Brown, The Game, and more, Matt helped define a generation of hip hop through his visuals. With over 10 billion views, Matt's now taking on everything from filmmaking to artist management to educating the next generation of filmmakers. Welcome to our podcast, Matt.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that intro. That was great.
So let's start from the beginning. You're a kid growing up in Carpinteria, California, small town in SoCal. Starting at age 7, you pick up a camera and start editing videos with VHS tapes. How soon did you know that you wanted to be a director?
Well, early on, 6, 7, I had no clue what anything in the film industry was or looked like or titles or anything like that. All I knew was my dad had this box that he shoved in my face. And then when company would come over, he'd plug it into the TV and I'd see myself, my sister, my family dancing. And I realized that this box made people laugh, smile, cry. It just created an emotion. And I really, really was intrigued by that. And so I started taking that box that I hated and sticking it in everybody else's face. And it wasn't really until I got to film school, maybe like my first or second year, that I realized director was the title for me. I was an editor up to that point. I shot everything, but I edited mainly. Like, that's where I was really in love. That's where my love really started for filmmaking, because I can manipulate. Once again, I can manipulate everything. So once I started editing these director stuff who wasn't very good, I was like, okay, yeah, I got to start directing. And that's when I took that title on. So it wasn't until I was about 19.
So you go to film school. Looking back now, what would you say was the number one takeaway you learned from that experience that still helps you in your career today?
Man, film school for me was amazing. A lot of people are, you know, kind of anti. I mean, the price I get, but for me, it was hands down, I wouldn't be where I am today. I would be doing weddings or, you know, local access or something like that. But really, for me, it just gave me the opportunity to trial and error without having clients or without having like my reputation on the line. If you were to graduate and just come right into the professional world as a filmmaker, you might get hired for a project, although it might be small, you might mess up, you know, whatever. And now you're starting to build a reputation that's not very good. So for me, I had 3 years of just trial and error, which for me was the biggest component to my success later on.
That's good advice. I've never heard somebody explain film school that way, but that makes a lot of sense. As you started to become a director, who were some of your earliest inspirations?
You know, to be honest, like, I really didn't know anything about like names. I mean, obviously I knew Spielberg. And I realized after film school, since like 98% of the kids went home and went back to, you know, work at Blockbuster or whatever, I realized that there's a lot of people who like watching films. And then there's people who like making films or video content. And I was one of the ones who liked to make it. So I wasn't really like into names, actors, anything like that. I just replicated what I saw. And I realized as I got older, I really liked the Scott brothers. I liked a lot of their shooting techniques, their editing techniques. They were just a little out of the box and a little fast cutting and just, you know, some really like edgy stuff. So that's kind of, I would say some inspiration I pulled from them. And other than that, I would just say, I mean, Hype Williams, obviously, as a kid, just watching his music videos, not really even connecting like, hey, that's what I want to do, or I'm going to do that one day. But just, you know, seeing those, like if Nas and Lauryn Hill, If I Ruled the World and all these type of videos, those ones obviously had a real big effect on me, I think subconsciously.
And so early in your career, you start working for a record label. You're kind of doing music videos, but a lot of editing, and you really felt like they were holding you back. Tell me what was going through your head at that time.
So my second year, Second year in film school, I started doing internships. My parents didn't have a lot of money. They refinanced the house. They did everything they possibly could to get me there to film school. So I had to take it super, super seriously. So I would be going to school and then I would drive to LA. I happened to get an internship with this record company for this, this mogul, if you will. He was an infomercial guy. He did a bunch of vitamin stuff and he had so much money that he decided to start a record label. And his record label gimmick was he was going to shoot, he was going to record two albums for each artist back to back and shoot every single music video. So, I interned for a little while and as soon as I graduated, he gave me a full-time job, but he released all the other staff and he's like, you're all I need. And I was like, okay. I mean, I was getting paid a lot of money right out of school. But after like a month or two, I realized like, this is not for me. There's not only that was I doing all the work. I didn't mind that, but I had nobody to learn from. I had nobody to show me the ropes. I had no mentors, no guidance whatsoever. And that was something that I really wanted. And so I just, I broke down one day, called my dad and he's like, he asked me two questions. Are you growing as a man? I said, nope. He said, are you growing creatively? I said, nope. He said, okay, you know what to do. I don't think he meant like, you know what to do, like do it right now. But I just grabbed my backpack and I just walked out. Didn't say anything to anybody. And yeah, then my car got repossessed. Apartment was gone. Top Ramen. But yeah, I couldn't do it anymore. I was wearing a suit and tie too. It just creatively, there was no growth. I was already at the peak. I was already at the highest level I could possibly be at this company. And there was no point for me to stay. So I had to move on.
Wow. Yeah, I've never heard of a director, editor has to wear a suit and tie every day to work.
Yeah, it was weird, you know? I mean, because his record label wasn't really like a major record label. It was just, he made so much money. He made millions and millions and millions. And so he decided to do this as like a side hobby. But yeah, I mean, regardless if the suit and tie, which sucked, but just the, you know, there's no one to show me anything, you know? So I just had to go.
And you felt like you found those mentors very soon after that?
No, unfortunately, up to this date, you know, because the reason being was I was competition. So as soon as I left there, Craigslist, did a bunch of wild jobs, happened to shoot a concert and found out Lil Wayne was the guy that was actually the headlining, recorded that, came home, posted it on YouTube, got a million overnight, which back then was, you know, 2007, huge deal. Then I was with DJ Ski. Ski was connected with Game. Chris Clancy, who was the marketing director over at Interscope. And so they just threw us a couple of videos, which were huge videos, Game, Travis Barker, and Cardinal Official featuring the Clips. And boom, I was off to the races. And everyone in LA was trying, you know, was shooting with me, Be Real. I mean, everybody. So instantly I became competition. And not only was I competition because I was a young gun, I was doing things for 1/8 of the price, but I didn't know that at the time, but that's just, you know, the opportunity that I was given. And so we took it, but yeah, so no one was trying to mentor me whatsoever, which was unfortunate. Yeah. Very unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it sounds like, you know, the LA dream, honestly, for a lot of people. I mean, it's so difficult to crack. And in the industry, you come down here, quit your job, just start shooting random shows. You meet the right person. And the next week you're on set with some of the biggest artists in the game, shooting music videos, right?
With the red camera, red one. Like, we were the first ones to shoot at the red one. Like, it was just crazy. Yeah, just like that, though, too.
Yeah, that's crazy. How was that moment? Was there a bit of surrealism just, like, when you were there directing?
Nah, not at all. I brought my parents, and I was just, I mean, I was ready to go. It's something that I had been, you know, I've been working on every single day as far as preparation and just, you know, going over the, you know, we did short films. We did a lot of hands-on projects in film school, so... So I was just ready to go and I found a great crew. At first I was just a director. I had nothing. I had like a little one chip camera and this rapper, shout out to Demrick. He had just met this group of guys. There was like 6 or 7 guys living in a studio apartment. They had just graduated film school. They were everything but a director and they were looking for a director. So he connected us and I called him. I said, hey, you want to come over to the studio? Kaski called me and said, hey, come to Snoop's studio. So I came to Snoop's studio and that was like the first video I shot. It was Corrupt, Snoop, DJ Quick, and Terrence Martin. And they showed up. Everyone had like different cameras. And then that was it. It was off the races.
Wow, that's crazy. And so you get connected with DJ Ski. You're shooting a bunch of videos for all the big artists now. Career's growing. What would you say was the moment when you felt like you arrived, like where you had the biggest music video where the game just kind of changed for you and really vaulted you?
I mean, I guess I would never feel like I arrived because, you know, my goals are bigger than music videos. It just happened to like stumble upon, you know, my direction. But I would say like Fly Like a G6 or New Boys Tie Me Down. Those videos were really big. And then when I did the Bieber video with Major Ali, that was, you know, that was kind of a, you know, I was trending in like 17 countries on Twitter. It was crazy. Obviously not because of me, because of Bieber, but that really helped me get a lot more eyes. I remember being in the XXL magazine with Nipsey and like all those guys. I had a write up in there. So that was, you know, a proud moment for, you know, for me and for my parents. But yeah, I would say that's kind of, or Turn My Swag On. That might've been another one too.
Yeah. I remember the Fly Like a G6 video, man. That was a good one.
On a 5D, on a Canon 5D.
Really?
Yeah. I was the first one to shoot. Yeah. First one to shoot on a 5D with that as well.
Yeah, man. I used to, I ran a production company. I produced, I directed in the past. And like that video, like stylistically had a lot of influence on me. Big fan of that video, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It was a cheap video.
It didn't look like it. So Ski TV continues to evolve. Next step in your career, you're producing Ski Live as a part of Mark Cuban's TV network.
Mm-hmm.
What was that evolution like, and how did it change you as a creative in your role?
Well, I mean, so what we were trying to do at Ski TV, you know, originally, I mean, we were a marketing company, so we used music videos just to gain analytics, and then we would take those analytics and go pitch for other things. Eventually we were going to do a whole channel. So we were going to do a channel, whether it was MTV, you know, we weren't sure where it was going to be, but it was like an MTV with a bunch of different programming. That fell through. So eventually what we did is all this programming that I had written up, we just condensed it into a 1 hour show. And so it was, I remember doing 75 different pieces for, I think it was 10 or 12, episodes. So, it was pretty hectic. But it was cool. It was great to try something new. And we had already kind of done all these things, you know, previously as far as, you know, in bits and pieces, just not to this level. But yeah, it was great. It was a great experience. And I'm glad I have that under my belt. And, you know, the live stuff was easier. I'll say easier. Okay. But, you know, it wasn't as exciting, like camera one, camera two. And then your job's over. But I also did 60, you know, pieces and wrote and did all that stuff as well. So yeah, it was a great experience, you know, and shout out to Ski for always pushing the boundaries and you know, taking me with them.
Yeah. I think at one point you described there was like a lot of creative tension there at Ski TV, you know, all for the greater good, but what was it like working there?
Well, I mean, you know, I was 22 years old, right? 22 years old. I was a partner in the company. We had no money in the beginning. We were a startup. Startup on YouTube, which, you know, you got to remember back then YouTube was like nothing, you know, no one, you know, YouTube was nothing at all. So we were a startup, no money on YouTube, you know? So, you know, and that was fine.
Before YouTubers, before influencers.
Oh, I mean, this is way before any of that stuff. You know what I mean? I think like the biggest video was like these people running on a treadmill back in those days, like a million views was unheard of, you know? So that was a little, you know, challenging to get going, but he had so many connections. I had the work ethic and the work to really propel us. So that really helped out. It just got to a point where, you know, he wanted to go more into the DJing marketing and just kind of do more of those type of things. And I really, you know, I had a couple reps and a couple agencies trying to recruit me. And I wanted to see what else was out there. I also was the top guy over at Ski because it was me, Ski, and two other people when we first started. And so I was the head of production, you know, the whole time I was there. So, you know, I was always a top guy. I wanted to be somewhere where I could learn. And it just got to a point where, you know, I trained some understudies and, you know, I went my own way, but it was all love. You know what I mean? It was all in good faith, and we still do stuff together all the time. So shout out to Ski and everybody over at the Ski TV, but it was a great, I mean, great opportunity. I mean, you know, I learned so much and met so many people. So
that seems to be a theme with your career. You go in and you're the top guy. You know, because you can do it all.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Maybe that's a downside of having that much talent, you know?
It definitely is. It definitely is, you know? And then it's hard when you try, like I've tried even after that to go work at other places and come in. I say, you know, I'll come in low and work my way up, but they're just like, you're kind of overqualified for this job. And I'm like, well, isn't that? I mean, it should be a good thing, you know? But yeah, I mean, you know, so you just try to take it wherever you can get it, you know, as far as, excuse me. I just try to take inspiration and words of wisdom from anybody I can, whether it's in the film industry or just, you know, people wiser and older than me and more successful. So, you know, unfortunately I wanted to be under someone's wing, like, you know, an Esteban, a Hype or someone like that. But those opportunities just never came across my path. Although, you know, shout out to Taj. He was a director. He was over with Colin Tilley at Riveting way back in the day. Actually, Taj started Riveting and then Colin was his editor. Before Chris Brown stuff, but Taj took me under his wing a little bit. He's the one who brought me over to Happy Place and Lark once I left Ski TV. Those were my rep and my production company as a director. So, you know, and then obviously my rep, Jamie Com Rabino and Tara Razabi, they helped me so much, like so much. So shout out to them, but I just never really had like a director mentor. But you know, we figured it out.
Yeah, definitely. So what happened after Ski TV? Where did you go? I think you opened your own production company at that point. What was next for you then?
So after Ski TV, I created a production company called Modern Artist. Although I had it the entire time, I would do like side jobs or jobs that we didn't really want to put Ski TV's name on. I would put them out underneath this production company. But you know, I kind of went full force on that. Although, you know, I did have my rep in my other production company who would do like my big $100,000-$200,000 videos. What I was trying to do at that time was trying to build, you know, a production company with some directors and basically have them grandfather them in, give them opportunities that I was getting that I could produce and oversee, and then allow them to get the opportunity that they never would get. But it just didn't work, man. These, you know, I would send them changes and they'd be like, well, I'm not changing this. It's done. And I'm like, no, it's not the way it works. And so after a few times of those, I was just like, all right, it's just too much for me. I can't really. You know, I can't, because I would have to do the work at the end of the day because my name's on the line. So so then I really just started focusing on, you know, on just my work and just trying to see what else was out there. I was also signed to ICM as a feature film director, and I was up for, you know, Safe House. I was up for a bunch of films. So that was kind of a priority as well. But, you know, after him, my agent really wanted like a $20, $30 million movie. And I'm like, dude, I'm 27 years old. Like, you know, some music video director, who the heck's going to give me that? So after a few years, I just decided, all right, enough of you guys. I appreciate it. But it was time to just go my own direction. So, and yeah, I mean, it's kind of where I've been, just kind of, you know, doing branded content, anything other than music videos, unless they come up, like they come knocking, which they do. So when they do, I take them.
And going back into, you know, going back to music videos, I know we've been
hitting on
that topic a lot, but I'm just curious, what is your favorite music video you've ever directed?
I get asked this a lot, and I have to say The Game featuring Tyler, the Creator, Martians vs. Goblins. You know, the first time I shot Game, that was like my first big video. And not that he didn't like me, but he was just like, who is this little kid? You know, like, and I had a big ass clipboard and notes, and he was just like, bro. And then I tried to put girls doing the, there was a, like a drug video, and I tried to put girls like in like bikinis. I don't know why they were wearing bikinis, but he's like, we're not doing that. He's like, take their clothes off. And they were like, we're not taking our clothes off. Like, who's his director? And I'm like, oh, fuck. So, but during that time, he was kind of a dick to me, and I was like, that's fine. But I had this vision of him being like a monster or something other than like a gangster with Chuck Taylors. And it just happened to make a song with Tyler. I was doing a lot of directing for Tyler and Odd Future and Chris Clancy, all those guys over there when they were coming out. And so they decided to shoot the video, and I had this idea already, and I just put it right to the piece of paper, and he didn't read the treatment. He showed up. He's like, whatever you want me to do. Cause he had already seen the results of the last video, put contact in his eyes. We put spaghetti in his Jordans, and the video turned out great. And it was actually a really cheap video. So, but yeah, that one I would say is probably my favorite.
Nice. And what's it like working with Tyler, the Creator? I mean, he's such a creative dude himself.
He's awesome. He's hilarious. He's like, I wish my brain thought like his, because he's the type of guy who's like, my brain kind of thinks on a producing level. So I'm like, okay, you know, a music video, you know, with a rocket ship and stuff. I go, ah, it's too much money. He just says, no, I want a rocket ship. We're going to land on Mars. We're going to do all this stuff. And he doesn't care about the money or anything like that. So that's really cool. You know, I really helped him early on. I did all his like golf promotion. I did all the Odd Future stuff because Chris Clancy was the marketing director at Interscope. He's the one who gave us the opportunity for you know, turn my swag on. And then he left and became Tyler, Odd Future, Frank Ocean's manager, which he still is. And so he brought me in right away, and it was fun. I mean, he's just a wild kid, really creative. Back then he wasn't too technical. He just had a lot of ideas, and so I just helped him take his ideas and find a way to get it done. So you know, shout out to Tyler. I love him. I see him on Fairfax every now and then. Yeah, it was good times.
Nice. Goblin. That was one of my favorite music videos back then.
Yeah, yeah. That video was crazy. Ponch did that. He was, you know, same production company and everything like that. So,
yeah.
Super creative kid. Super creative kid. Like I said, he has no blocks or no, he knows no barriers whatsoever, which is a great thing, you know?
And follow up on that. What's your favorite music video not directed by Matt Alonzo?
Shit. Probably Nas, If I Ruled the World back in the day. Yeah, because that one just sticks in my head. Or A Sky's the Limit with the little kids that were rapping with Notorious B.I.G. When they did all the little kids, you know, like old, Hype's old stuff. Yeah, I would say that like those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah, I always love like the first person shooting style. Like comes to mind like Miami to Ibiza.
Tiny
Tempa or Prodigy back in the day.
Yeah, that's where I kind of got the reference for Fly Like a G6.
Yeah, I was going to say it has that style to it. I love that. Cool. So you mentioned at one point you were rep by ICM. Mm-hmm. What was your experience with that? And what do you think about repping and just reps in general being a part of the future of the industry?
So I had my music video representation that had my feature film representation. Both were great. You know, my music video rep was a beast, you know, like she was, I mean, at the time I was young, I didn't understand like managers and reps at the time. So if it was quiet for like a week, I'd be out trying to get jobs, you know, for $7,000. And she's at the same record label pitching me for $200,000 jobs. You know what I mean? And I just didn't understand. Be patient, you know? When it came to the feature film side, ICM was great. You know, to be honest, I was young and I really didn't even know the scope of like what I was getting into. Although I did take everything seriously, I just didn't know. I had nobody really to talk to and bounce ideas off of. So I was going into meetings with Paramount, like, I mean, you know, these huge movies. And I was putting together decks and trailers, changing the script, you know, just full on. But I have to say my heart wasn't really in it because I didn't have the ability at that particular time to see something that was going to take 3 years. You know, to like, to get complete. I just didn't see it in my brain, you know? And so, I mean, I saw it, but I just was like, holy shit, this is going to take forever. And so it was a little discouraging, you know what I mean? Boring, if you will, I guess. You know, although I did all the work, I made these cool trailers. I did above and beyond, but at the same time, it was just, you know, meeting after meeting. Okay. Let's meet this other producer. Okay. This is another producer. Oh, we might change the script meeting here. And you're just like, holy crap, you know? But it was a great, I mean, the opportunities that presented to me, I never would have ever had the chance of even crossing paths with these type of people. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what the trade-off is, you know? And I think it's a great thing. You know, I think more directors should have managers or reps. You're going to give me their percentage, but you're also going to get a lot more opportunities than you ever will by yourself, you know? So, that's kind of my thought on that.
Yeah. It sounds like your personality is kind of like addicted to creating. Like if you're not creating something, you can't sit still.
I'm like, what am I doing? Yeah. When I first signed, so I left Ski TV, I signed with Lark, and she was like, look, your videos are great. Your budgets are 10,000-20,000 maybe. And they're like, you know, we're going to take you to the next level. We want you to get 60,000-80,000. So we're going to say no to anything that comes in unless it's 50,000 or 60,000. I'm like, no. And so for like 4 months, I didn't work. I was like crying, freaking out, like this, you know, and then obviously 60s, 70s, 80s, and then, you know, started coming in. And so she's like, you got to be patient. You got to sit, you know? And so then I realized, okay, chill. But still, it took me a long time to let the people who I have on my team work for me and not try to like work for myself. And you know what I mean? Cause that's when it gets chaotic. But I think a lot of the young kids, you know, don't understand that.
Yeah, I agree. It's something I think a lot of young kids or new directors struggle with, is setting their prices, you know, and I always admire the companies or the directors that can set the $500,000, $1 million price range and go out and win it. You know, when you know damn well you could do it for 50, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It just depends on what they want. It just depends on what they want. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously with more, the thing I've realized though is like with more money, it's just more cooks in the kitchen. It's a little, you know, more bureaucracy. It's a lot slower. But you know, it has its ups and downs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So, you know, it's interesting. You've been telling me oftentimes you were looking for a mentor or somebody to you know, help you in your career. And now it's kind of come full circle and you're really becoming an educator, putting out a ton of content, working with the next generation of filmmakers. Tell me a little bit more about that and why you're passionate about that.
I've always had the desire to be a mentor and teach and give back. And, you know, I've always been a leader. I've always been, you know, the head of the pack, even in high school, you know. And so, you know, not having a mentor, not having somebody to kind of answer questions for me as much as I wish I had, I know that there's other kids coming up that are like me or are like me back when I was coming up. So I just try to do as much as I can to answer questions. And once I started getting these emails about life changing and, you know, I was in prison, you know, I was in jail and I saw your article in the XXL and I started getting, I mean, once you start hearing these type of things where you're kind of like, you know, I don't know the exact word for it because it's pretty extreme, you know, and it's, you know, I feel honored, but I also feel like a duty at that point, you know, at least in my view, not everybody's view, you know, it's not everybody's duty to go and teach. So I just started doing it and I got a lot of opportunities from, you know, from other teachers to come in and teach their class or just to come in for an hour. And then I started growing from there. And so, you know, every now and then I'll drop a YouTube video, although I just can't do the YouTube. It's so hard. It's so hard for me. But, you know, I did the class, the film league. That was a great experience. I did apertures. You know, I did a whole lighting class with them. And yeah, I just try to answer as many questions as I can and give back as much as I can, because I know when I was in that seat, if somebody would have just responded to me, I would have been, you know, greatly appreciative to them, and it would have really helped me a lot.
Up next, hear Matt's advice for cracking into the film industry. But first, we wanted to take a moment to tell you about Assemble, the industry-leading project management platform designed for producers. Assemble gives your team an end-to-end project management solution featuring calendars, task lists, and industry-specific features such as casting, location management, call sheets, advanced post-production review, and more. And of course, this platform has been designed from the ground up by producers for producers. Assemble is being used by industry-leading production companies, agencies, and brands to help them streamline their content production. If you're currently paying for a multitude of different tools and you just want one project management solution that can fulfill all of your workflow needs, try Assemble today. Our listeners get a special discount of 20% off for their first year. Just enter the code OFFSCRIPT, that's one word, at checkout. Learn more at assemble.tv/project-management. That's assemble.tv/project-management. You are listening to the Creatives OFFSCRIPT podcast. And so, the industry is so different now. I mean, How would you say, how has starting a career in filmmaking now changed since when you first got started?
I mean, now it's like, I mean, obviously now it's just congested. You know what I mean? Competition is crazy, which is good and bad. You know, you have a lot of opportunity, which, because, you know, back in those days, they weren't shooting, you know, there wasn't independent artists. There wasn't all these things, you know? So, so I kind of got my start, like, boom, right into the record labels. But now, I mean, you can go shoot for independent artists who never, and you never deal with a record label. I'm not saying that's a good thing, because a lot of that is going to be relatively cheap. But if you can be creative and find an artist who's willing to work with you financially, work with you creatively, and not be like, hey, I need the video tomorrow and this type of shit that you get on Instagram and stuff like that, then you have the opportunity to take yourself to the next level. And there's been guys like, you know, Cole Bennett, who was the guy who does the concerts? I forgot his name. He, you know, but there's been a couple guys who've really been able to do that. You know, they got an opportunity to, you know, to shoot a little concert, did some crazy editing, crazy transitions. Now he's doing Nike commercials and the weekend commercials and stuff like that. So the opportunity's there and the eyeballs are there. It's just about finding something that's going to break through all the clutter, which is really hard, really hard.
Yeah. What advice would you give to somebody nowadays? I mean, is it the traditional advice of find an artist, start building your portfolio, or is it more like get on TikTok, become an influencer? You know, what is the path?
So the thing is, I know a lot of, like, I guess filmmaking influencers, I guess you would call them, but they don't actually make films or like actually do any video production work. I mean, rarely, You know what I mean? They're teaching, but they don't have any sort of credentials, which is, it really fascinates me. So it's a little weird there. Like, you know, a couple of these YouTube kids and stuff, like, you know, so that's, I feel like it's two different spectrums, you know, because a lot of people like Hype X, Colin, you don't see them really on YouTube giving tutorials and talk because they're working, right? Like, so that I would say, if you want to be a YouTuber, then do that. And you will get opportunities for jobs, but you're going to be trying to follow up with all your YouTube stuff, staying on your weekly tasks or whatever it is to make sure your audience is engaged, all that stuff. And then you get a three or four music videos or whatever the case may be. It's going to be a lot of work. So, you know, if you want to be in the film industry, I would just say go right into it. And my biggest words of wisdom advice would be to find somebody, whether it's an internship or mentor, somebody that you can come underneath and really like show and prove yourself so that they can open the doors to whatever access they have. Like if I had a lot of kids come in here, but to be honest, 2-3 weeks, maybe a month or two, they take a picture with an artist and now they're starting their own production company and they take all my secrets. And I'm like, oh, great. That's cool. I mean, and that's, it just kind of, it happens, you know, but if they were able to stick through it, they could have, you know, they could have been doing all the music videos I turned down and all the music videos that, you know, that I, you know, I didn't want anymore. And it just, why not do that as opposed to just sitting at your house and shoot, you know, a $200 music video for somebody and get 30 views. I don't understand it. So something to think about. And that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I know you also talk a lot about preparation and pre-production. Tell me more about your approach to a film project and what the preparation takes.
So pre-production is everything, really, you know, and I think this is probably from film school. We took a year of just learning how to do pre-production from every aspect of, you know, the team. But a lot of people just want to grab a camera and shoot, but then they don't understand why their video doesn't look like a Colin Tilley or a Director X video. And you got to remember that even while I'm writing my treatment, so I get a song, say I get a song or a product or something, we'll just go with the music video for now. I get a song. Hey, it's Matt Alonzo, new single, $20,000. We want to shoot in LA on next week. So then I know right away, I don't have a ton of money. If it gets approved tomorrow, I have, you know, 6 days for pre-production to get everything I need in this video. So I'm going to write a video that's going to be able to be achieved within that time frame and for that amount of money. Some people just write whatever they, and they don't think about that, like Tyler, which I envy. But I also, from a business standpoint, excuse me. So my pre-production starts right away. And so I started thinking about that. Excuse me. And then what I do is I break everything down into scenes. Now, most of my music videos, I would say 95% of my music videos were shot in one day and shot in one location. So what I try to do is write a music video or write a story that I can shoot in, you know, basically turn the camera in four different directions and get four different looks or four different scenes and be able to connect it somehow. So then I have my crew, I have my whole team in one location. We're shooting, you know, these different scenes, but in the same spot, right? And really try to execute that way. I don't really write shot lists anymore ever since Game was like, well, he didn't throw my shot list, but he just closed it and he was like, bro, I had a huge shot list. After that, my shot list is kind of in my head. But then I scout, you know, I scout with my crew and I really kind of map it out what I want to do. And I either shoot two cameras or I have some sort of quick release so I can put it on a tripod, gimbal, you know, just any devices that I need. I try to just take eliminate all the little time, as much time as possible. So it moves as smooth as possible. And to be honest, I'm a director who wants to get my guys home. Like we're not doing heart surgery here. Let's get in, let's get out, let's have some fun. But some directors, well, let me watch it again. Well, what do you think? Let's shoot it one more time. And I'm like, nah, that's not me at all. So I try to keep my guys in mind as well and not have them work too hard. Because I've seen directors who shoot in this location and they move all the way to the other end of the location. And you're like, what are you doing? You know? So I take all that into an account. And then I just rock and roll. Grab the camera, put it on my shoulder and throw a flashlight in the lens and get it popping.
That's pretty fascinating. You don't use a shot list anymore. I think that's pretty unique.
For music videos, it's like, what do you, I mean, I write it, I have a basic shot list, like, okay, performance. So if I have a scene, I know off top, I'm going to shoot about 6 or 7 performances within this scene. Okay. Just different lenses. So, you know, medium, close up, a wide, but then for each of those lenses, I'm also going to shoot different shutter speeds. So I'm going to shoot something, you know, really, really sharp and crazy, Saving Private Ryan. And then I'm also going to shoot one that's a little bit smoother. And then I might put it on a gimbal or a dolly or whatever the case may be. So I have all these, I kind of have that already, I guess, mapped out. That's kind of a shot list. But when it comes to like all the story bits and things like that, I kind of just freestyle it. One, because sometimes you don't get to scout the location. And so it's really hard for me to write a shot list without knowing the location, the architecture, the curves, everything like that. So unless I'm able to scout, then I can do that. But also rappers, singers, guest cameos, everybody's freaking late. Okay. Everyone's late or early, or they want to leave, or something happens. So you have to be able to improvise. And I find that if you have a shot list, you might try to stick to it. Although you still have to be able to adapt, but I have a shot list in my head. I edit as well. So I can see all the cuts in my head. I kind of know when I have it. I can combine shots. Okay. Boom, boom, boom. All right. Let's shoot one shot. Bam. All right. Let's get him out of here. Thank you. And so I've been able to learn how to do that. And that's a skill that you definitely need.
Yeah.
Rappers to their own videos will come 8 hours late. And you're like, what the heck is going on?
You know, the way you explain it actually makes it sound a lot less stressful without a shot list, because you just pick up the camera and go.
You kind of know your scenes. You know what you're doing. And then, like I said, I mean, this is my 12th, 13th year. I probably shot 200 music videos. So I have an idea of what I need. I know bare bones what I can walk away with, and that's what I start with, and then I build from there.
So moving forward, I see you've moved into managing artists now. Tell me how that's become an evolution of your career.
Well, you know, I had all these, you know, favors and, you know, from industry people, whether it was A&Rs, you know, head of labels, you know, video commissioners, producers, singers, all these people are like, hey, do me this favor, shoot this video, do this, whatever. And I always told them, and I told myself, all right, you guys are going to come and perform at my wedding and, you know, whatever, right? That was like my, okay, you guys can pay me back then. Now I realize, okay, I'm never getting married. So let me cash my chips in somewhere else. And really I wanted to grow with an artist. I've shot a lot of videos for first time artists and really like kind of creative directed and really kind of built their look and their feel and as they, you know, went on into their career. And so I was like, all right, I really don't want to just do one video or one thing. I want to build on that. I really want to see the growth and see what I can do. And then obviously bring in all my connections. You know, I can call the head of Interscope. I can call the head of Warner. I can call, you know, get in meetings anywhere. And so that's what I decided to do. And, Christian Gates, It's Lux City, you know, he had 200,000 monthly listeners on Spotify this month, 2.6 million in 8 months since I've been managing them. So the growth has been exponential, and it's a lot of fun. And it's something I don't have my heart into. Like, I realized with filmmaking, it's kind of like getting high on my own supply. I'm too emotionally connected to my music videos or to my work, where I'm maybe not able to make the best business decisions, as opposed to managing or doing, you know, the music side. I have no emotional connection whatsoever. I look at the numbers, I look at the choices, I lay them out, and I can kind of see things a little bit more clearly. So that has been refreshing for me.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting, honestly, to be able to really kind of creative direct an artist's career and like you said, watch them grow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I said, just having the disconnect between emotionally investing into, you know, like a perfect video or something like that, where I'm sitting here for 70, 80 hours editing and stuff like that. I don't have that sort of pull to it. And that's, like I said, really refreshing, and it helps me make a lot more clear and the best or better decisions.
I see you've also been working with Jake Paul, kind of documenting the boxing career. How's that experience been?
Wild and fun. I've always been a huge, huge boxing fan ever since I was a kid. And when the pandemic started, I teamed up with Andre Berto, who was a two-time world champion boxer. And, you know, he was – he's kind of – maybe he has a fight or two left, and he really wants to transition into, you know, the media media realm. And so I created a whole, you know, basically a whole network for him. And we started on YouTube. We did a bunch of these episodes and shows that I wrote, kind of like I did for Ski. And we happened to go out there to the Jake Paul fight. And, he's really good friends with his trainer. They were amateurs together. So we just started hanging out. And then once I saw the kid train, I was like, and how big he is, I was like, man, this kid's going to be, he's going to be a problem. So that was really cool. Great. He's actually super cool, dude. Super chill. Nothing like, I mean, he talks a lot of shit and stuff, but I mean, he's a marketing genius. I get it from that standpoint. So, but as soon as the camera's off, he's just chill. He's regular. I was supposed to go to Cleveland for the last fight, man. Ringside tickets. I had COVID. I was so pissed. So, yeah. So we'll be out there again. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with him and we'll see how it goes. But it's a lot of fun. It's hilarious. Those guys are just wild.
I can imagine. Cool, man. Well, you know, it sounds like you're just continuing to evolve your career as the industry continues to evolve. Just to wrap up, I'm curious, what's next for you?
I don't know. I'm asking myself that as we speak, to be honest. I mean, really, I'm just trying to take a look at where to go next, you know, whether it looks like probably going to be a feature film, realistically, either feature film or commercial, although commercial world, it's a little too slow and a little not as creative as I'd like. Great pay though. So you might see me in the commercials, but I think it's the feature film time.
Exciting stuff, man. Well, thank you for joining us. Always good to catch up.
I really appreciate you having me on. I had a great time.
Awesome. Take care.
All right, bro.
If you're interested in hearing more insight and inspiration from industry-leading creatives, click subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts to become one of our listeners today. You can also join our newsletter for more insider content by going to assemble.tv/blog and signing up there. And you can find me on all channels at Nate Watkin. And don't forget, if your producing team is in need of a project management solution, try Assemble today to streamline your production workflow. Our listeners receive a 20% discount for their first year by utilizing the promo code OFFSCRIPT, that's one word, at checkout. You have been listening to the Creatives Off Script podcast, sponsored by Assemble.